Good morning. It is 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Cloudy, 67 degrees. We're looking at a high today of 91, so it's going to be a scorcher out there. We haven't seen that kind of high temps in a while. And this morning, we're going to talk about how our body responds, not when we're talking about all things health. In fact, more specifically, your heart. Cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of both men and women worldwide. Here in the United States, over half of the population could be dealing with heart disease or stroke by 2050. Here to break down the numbers and offer some heart-healthy advice is Allina Health cardiologist Dr. Stephen Bradley. Dr. Bradley, thanks for coming on with us today.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here with you, Susie.
Yeah, and thanks for coming on so early. I know it's kind of not fun to get up at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, but cardiovascular disease is a big deal. Why do you think it's so deadly in the U.S. and around the world?
Well, that's a great question, Susie. I think it's important to understand, as you point out, and we'll discuss further, it's a very common condition. We're talking about conditions that affect the blood vessels to the heart and to the brain, and so major organs to the body, and they affect all of us. It affects people of all sexes, genders, races, and ethnicities are all at risk of cardiovascular disease. And as a result of being common and affecting all of us, and we at times, people can fail to recognize that they're at risk and fail to recognize symptoms that may be important for them to be evaluated and checked out to prevent events from happening. And it can happen such that they get checked out too late, and it's a very deadly disease.
What are some of those signs? That seems to be the natural question to follow, because people listening this morning here on WCCO Radio, reminding you again, as you're listening, you can ask a question of Dr. Bradley at 651-461-9226. That's our stylesfinancial.com talk and text line, 651-461-9226. You're talking about the signs. What are they? And are they ones you might think, that's a sign? I mean, I think we think, Dr. Bradley, oh, you get a shooting pain down your left arm, I'm having a heart attack. Are there other signs?
Yeah, those are important things to discuss. And so when we talk about heart attacks, most commonly we're talking about a symptom of chest pressure or chest discomfort that can be associated with things like shortness of breath and then other symptoms like nausea, sweating profusely. And these can happen suddenly. The thing that is important to remember is the heart does not have nerve endings like our fingers and toes. So we don't want to feel our heart working every beat. So we don't generally feel our heart.
And that so is so interesting. I never thought about that, Dr. Bradley. You don't feel
yeah,
your
absolutely.
Heart. Yeah, cool. Go ahead. Continue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when it's in trouble, it can have very vague symptoms because we're not used to feeling our heart. So it has these symptoms of chest discomfort, chest pressure, shortness of breath. That pain or that discomfort can radiate to the shoulder or the back or the jaw. The most common or what you'll hear of as kind of classic is the symptom of feeling like an elephant is standing on a person's chest.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important that that's the most common presentation, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other ways that people can present with symptoms that are related. Importantly, one of the warning signs can be with activity. If there's not enough blood flow to the heart when people are working hard, so if there are blockages in blood flow to the heart muscle, when people are sitting in their chair watching TV or listening to the radio like they might be doing now, they could feel fine.
Mm.
But when the heart needs to do more work to supply blood and oxygen to the body, those blockages prevent blood flow to the heart muscle, so the heart muscle essentially starts to starve, and they can have those symptoms of chest pressure, shortness of breath, and that can be a warning sign. But those symptoms can happen suddenly in the setting of a heart attack. And that's where instead of asking, well, maybe I'll get checked out tomorrow, if that happens suddenly and doesn't go away in the span of 5 minutes, that's a call to 911.
Very good.
Now, stroke is very different. Stroke is a problem with blood flow to the brain. So there we're looking at the American Stroke Association has developed the FAST terminology. So face drooping for F. So if the face is drooping, A is arm weakness. S is speech difficulty. And if any of those things are happening, face drooping, arm weakness, or speech difficulty, then that's when T happens. T is time to call 911. This is not something to wait on because time is important as we're talking about recovering from or making it through a heart attack or a stroke.
I heard someone once say, time is muscle or something like that.
Yes,
where
yes.
Where it, the longer you wait, the more damage you do to the heart muscle, which then prohibits you maybe from recovering at all or as fast as you might normally otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the quote that we use, and I almost pulled it out myself there. Time is muscle. And unlike I'm a runner, and if you injure a muscle, you can recover. That muscle can recover and get back to essentially the same strength it was before. The heart is very different. But if the heart suffers damage and that muscle is injured, that muscle does not necessarily recover. And so time is muscle. And if we can act quickly and restore blood flow to that heart muscle that's starving from a heart attack, we can avoid that permanent damage. But there is a limited opportunity, and time is muscle.
Again, you are listening to our Health Hour here on WCCO Radio. My name is Susie Jones. It is Sunday. It is Father's Day. And we're thinking about our fathers and their hearts today, and our mothers. With us on our newsline is Allina Health cardiologist Dr. Stephen Bradley, also with the Minnesota Heart Institute. It's Minnesota Heart Institute, right, doctor?
It's Allina Health Minneapolis Heart Institute.
Minneapolis. I've been there a few times. When we come back, we want to invite people to join the program because there's a lot of good information here and people may or may not have questions. The number here is 651-461-9226. It is our salesfinancial.com talk and text line. And if you have a question for the doctor, please feel free to jump in. It is 16 minutes now past 7 o'clock. Good morning. It is 7:19. My name is Susie Jones, and I'm your host on this Sunday morning, along with Charlie Weiss at the helm. And it is the time of week we set aside an entire hour to talk about all things health. And today we are talking about your heart. That's right. We also want to say happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And we appreciate them and all the hard work they do. And we want their hearts to be healthy as well. And we're talking about heart health with Allina Health cardiologist, Dr. Stephen Bradley. Dr. Bradley, thanks for sticking around. We do have phone calls and we do have text questions. But are men more likely to suffer heart disease than women? Have we found that?
That's an important question. And there's two sides to that question. First and foremost, to be honest, yes. Men are at increased relative to women in terms of having cardiovascular disease, but cardiovascular disease is still the number one killer of women in our country. And so when we say men are at increased risk, sometimes that's all we hear. And so women start to think that, well, if I'm not at the same risk of men, and so this isn't the condition that affects me. That's something we need to be very careful about. So although I say that men are at increased risk, I think it's important to recognize that women are also at risk, particularly if those health behaviors, those things that contribute to cardiovascular disease are not where they should be, or if family history contributes as well. So women are at risk, and important to recognize that as well.
651-461-9226. That is our Stiles Financial talk and text line. 651-461-9226 if you want to jump into the conversation. Good morning. This texter just writes, thanks for the show. I'm allergic to contrast dye. I would like to have a CT scan, but I'm concerned about another anaphylactic reactions. Any suggestions to that person's text?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so just to set the stage a little bit, one of the tests we can use to evaluate for blockages in the blood vessels to the heart or even to the brain involves using a contrast dye that we can see under moving x-ray. So moving pictures where we watch that contrast flow down the blood vessels. And some people, as is the case with medications, they can be allergic to that dye. We can use medications to pre-treat patients who have that allergy to essentially block or suppress that allergic reaction so that patients can tolerate that procedure safely. And we know how to do that safely at Allina Health Minneapolis Heart Institute.
Very good. Another texter writes, thank you for your program. If you think you're having a heart-related event, are you better off having someone drive you right away to the hospital or waiting for an ambulance to arrive?
You are always better off waiting for an ambulance. So calling 911. Excellent response time so that they can be there and evaluate you. The concern would be if you drive yourself and you're not being cared for by medical professionals and you have an event, that there's no one who can respond appropriately to continue to treat you and save your life. So yeah, it's always best to call 911 in that situation.
Because obviously they can treat you en route to what's happening, whereas a loved one doesn't have that capacity or the equipment, obviously, on board to do that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. 651-461-9226. What causes swelling in the legs, feet, and ankles? I do have cardiomyopathy, which has been going on for about 2 weeks. So.
So that's a great question. We've spoken about heart attacks and strokes, but there are other cardiovascular conditions, and one is heart failure, and that can be a problem with the heart pump's function, either in terms of how well it squeezes or how well it relaxes. And when the heart pump function is reduced, that means not as much blood flow is getting to the rest of the body. And one of the places that regulates how much blood flow is going through the body is the kidneys. The kidneys, if they don't see as much blood going past them, they think you're dehydrated. And so they only see how much blood's going by. They don't know if the problem is because you're not eating and drinking and alone on a deserted island, or if the problem is with the heart. So the kidneys do what they can do, and they hang on to water and salt, which keeps the tank full because they think you're dehydrated. The problem isn't that you're dehydrated. The problem is the heart function has changed. And so that extra fluid starts to back up in the system, including the legs and feet. Now, it's important to recognize that heart function problems aren't the only reason for people to have swelling in their feet. So the veins themselves in the legs, as we get older, they can change, and they might not work as well as they once did. And so it's not uncommon for us as we get older, particularly in the hot weather that it sounds like we might have coming in the coming days, that those veins don't do as well in bringing the blood from the legs and feet back to the rest of the body. And so you can have swelling that's related to those veins. That's a very common condition. People can use things like compression stockings to help squeeze that blood back up. So I'd want our listeners to recognize that just because they might have some swelling in their legs and feet does not mean that they necessarily have a heart problem, but it can be a sign or symptom of a heart problem.
651-461-9226. That is our stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. And we're talking to Allina Health cardiologist Dr. Stephen Bradley about cardiovascular disease. It is the number one killer of both men and women worldwide. And here in the U.S., over half the population could be dealing with heart disease or stroke by 2050. It's kind of a staggering number, is it not? And not just on our well-being, but on our economy. I know that I was reading some material here before coming on with you, just what it could cost to the healthcare system nationwide.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're referencing some publications from the American Heart Association that recently came out. Friends and colleagues of mine at Washington University in St. Louis, as well as out east in Boston, who evaluated the anticipated trends in the rate of cardiovascular disease and how much it would cost. And certainly these are costly conditions. And so if more of these conditions happen, it's going to be a big strain on our economy, given the cost. And the real thought behind that trend is related to our health behaviors and recognizing that these health behaviors of diet, exercise, sleep, and tobacco use, along with risk factors, are anticipated to create this trend, this increasing prevalence or the number of patients who have these conditions.
It's pretty staggering. Just reading a bit about the study predicts that in 30 years, 6 in 10 people will have high blood pressure, meaning they are already then at risk of heart disease or stroke. I mean, that's a big number. That's almost, you know, half of people are going to be walking around potentially dropping dead or being in the hospital for this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the study suggests just north of 60% of us, 61% of us will have cardiovascular disease, with about half of that being related to high blood pressure, what's called hypertension. And high blood pressure is essentially the weight of the blood that has to be moved by the heart. It's the pressure against the blood vessel walls, and it's the weight that the heart has to lift to move blood around the body. And so if that blood pressure is high, it's creating tension on the blood vessels. It's increasing the risk of things like heart attack and stroke because of the tension on the blood vessels. And it's also putting pressure on our organs, like our brain and our kidneys. And it's putting that pressure on the heart, so increasing the risk of heart failure. So that suggestion that half of Americans may have high blood pressure in the coming years is really concerning as it relates to how that then translates into risk of heart attack, stroke, kidney failure, heart failure.
Dr. Bradley, how much of a pressure will that put on the system? So we look at our society, we're aging, we're becoming more obese. You know, you say this number 6 in 10. Is this just going to be too much for our healthcare system to manage?
That's a very important question. And not only is there an increasing number of patients that are anticipated to have these conditions, there are actually fewer and fewer doctors and healthcare providers as we anticipate the trends in care delivery. So we need to start thinking about how are we going to provide care differently so that we can help all of these patients that have these conditions. What are the strategies? What are the tools we can use? If we rely on our usual system of seeing patients in a standing clinic or to see patients face-to-face, there's just not enough time in the day to help care for all the patients who need it. So we need to start thinking about how we can leverage technology, different tools, different strategies of meeting patients in their home to help them with the care that they need.
So interesting. I mean, if we had a crystal ball to see what 30 years down the road is going to look like and how many people will be sick, unless we get a handle on it. And, you know, we're coming on the bottom of the hour. We do have to take a break. But I want to get to some of our more of our questions because we have more questions coming in. But I want to get to that. What can we do to reduce our risk? And, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Because if people aren't taking responsibility and they are smoking and drinking too much and they're overweight and they don't care, or, you know, they don't want to take the steps to change. Just it really gets into kind of a conundrum, as it were. But I know you're a cardiologist, not a policymaker, so we won't go down the philosophical road too much. But I do want to invite people to continue to take part in this program. It is 651-461-9226. It's our stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. And when we come back, we'll do a little bit of weather, and then we'll be back with more of your questions as well. And we are back. We are talking about cardiovascular disease. And we have with us on our newsline, Allina Health cardiologist, Dr. Stephen Bradley, taking your calls and your texts at 651-461-9226. That is our stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. And we have opened this up to your questions and your thoughts. And we have this question coming about Ozempic, the weight loss procedure that so many people are on, and whether or not that could be a helper in trying to keep the numbers down in terms of people with high blood pressure and other heart risk factors.
Yeah, that's a great question, and the future is hard to predict because it's the future. And so certainly when we look at these projections of the future burden of cardiovascular disease, excuse me, it's important to recognize that there are new therapies, including medications like Ozempic, that seem to have tremendous promise in helping with weight loss, and in the process of helping with weight loss, also help with other risk factors like cholesterol and blood pressure. And so it could be that as we continue to develop therapies, that some of these projections will be different. But more than just those therapies, it's important to help our listeners understand what they can do in their day-to-day lives to address those risk factors to reduce the likelihood of cardiovascular disease.
And let's jump right in there. So those things that you can do to reduce, besides losing weight, what other things can you do to try to get ahead and prevent cardiovascular disease?
Yeah, that's important. The American Heart Association has broken this down into what they call life's simple eight, and there are four behaviors and four risk factors. So the behaviors relate to diet, exercise, sleep, and tobacco use. And the risk factors that come from that are blood pressure, blood glucose that speaks to the risk of diabetes, cholesterol, and weight, so maintaining an appropriate weight. And so we can delve into those four behaviors in particular. Excuse me. Diet, I think that sometimes people can be very overwhelmed by diet. They hear so many different things about what's important and what's healthy. I think it can be helpful to break it down to some simple truths. We really think that fruits, vegetables, whole grain, and healthy fat choices are important. It's oftentimes that fats get a very bad rap, but there are good fats and bad fats. So some good fats, examples, olive oil, avocado, fish that's not fried, nuts that aren't salted, beans, legumes. Things that tend to come from the ground and give rise to life tend to be good choices. So avoiding things you can get at a gas station, avoiding things you can get at a fast food restaurant, minimizing those heavily processed foods and focusing on those fresh choices are some very simple, basic starting points. And then when we think about exercise, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Exercise next. So do we all have to
exercise.
Go? Do we all have to go run a marathon?
We do not. And it's important that there are a lot of people who are very active. They're active in their day to day as a result of their work or their hobbies. And that's important. Being sedentary, just sitting on a couch and doing nothing, that risk is as high as being a smoker. And I think a lot of people understand the risk of tobacco use, but we'll get into that as well. So activity is important, but we want more than just activity. We do want some exercise. And so when we talk about exercise, we're talking about working hard enough in whatever activity you're doing. So brisk walking, jogging, using a stationary bike, a regular bike, swimming, an elliptical machine, anything that you're getting your heart rate elevated enough that you get a little huffy puffy. You can't speak in full sentences. You certainly couldn't sing a song if you tried. That's the type of exercise we're looking for. And we're trying to get 150 minutes of that a week. So you can break that down into a little over 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes 5 days a week, 40 minutes 4 days a week. That's the type of amount and workload we're looking for to try and help that cardiovascular system stay healthy.
Very good.
Sleep. Go ahead.
You talk about sleep.
Yeah.
How does sleep play into this? That's kind of interesting. Doesn't seem like it would.
Yeah. It's important to recognize that sleep is a contributor to cardiovascular disease, and many of us do not get an adequate amount of sleep. And so we're talking about a minimum of 7 to 8 hours a night being contributory to cardiovascular disease. So trying to make sure you get that adequate amount of sleep, and then tobacco use. We know that smoking is a leading risk factor for cardiovascular disease, and so avoiding tobacco entirely.
Wonderful. Texter writes at 651-461-9226. My primary care doctor says I've developed a heart murmur. She did an ultrasound, which she said shows mild stenosis. Her advice is to wait until it gets worse and then we'll take action. I'm uncomfortable with that. Is it all right if I go ahead and see a different cardiologist, like get a second opinion?
Really important to first describe what a heart murmur is about, and then we'll talk about the specifics of that aortic stenosis. So a murmur just reflects turbulent blood flow through the heart, and even a normal functioning heart will have a little turbulence of blood flow as the blood is moving through its chambers and through its valves. And so even a normal healthy heart can have a heart murmur. So there may be listeners out there who have been told they have a heart murmur, and that doesn't necessarily reflect a problem with the heart. In certain situations, we can have changes in structures, including the valves, that increase the amount of that turbulence and increase that murmur. In aortic stenosis, the aortic valve sits between the main pumping chamber of the heart and the body and is designed to open up and let blood flow into the body and then close to keep it from washing back into the heart. And as we get older, that valve can have some changes that cause it to thicken and become more tight or stenotic. Stenosis is that term. Yeah. Mild stenosis is not something that we need to intervene upon, but is appropriate to watch over time. And we watch that with both talking with patients to make sure we understand if they're having any symptoms that make us concerned about changes in that valve, and then with pictures of the heart on occasion. So the recommendations from American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology would say for a patient with mild aortic stenosis, it's appropriate to watch that over time and repeat an echocardiogram in 3 to 5 years. So I think that it sounds like the listener's primary care doctor is doing a good job.
What is an echocardiogram? An EKG? What does that show and what does that do? How does that help?
Yeah, an echocardiogram is a little different than an EKG. And we'll talk about both. So an echocardiogram is using ultrasound to take pictures of the heart. So just like a submarine uses ultrasound to try and determine its structures around it, we can use ultrasound to bounce off the heart and take pictures of the heart. And so that ultrasound then gives us pictures of the heart structure, the heart function, the valve function. We can also use that ultrasound. We talked a little bit about aortic stenosis. We can look at the blood flow. And when we can use the example of water coming out of a garden hose. If you put your finger on the end of that hose, you accelerate the flow and you can see it spray a lot further across your yard. The same is true for that valve. We can look for that evidence of that sped up flow or that increased flow as a marker of stenosis. An EKG.
Things that you can do to reduce, besides losing weight, what other things can you do to try to get ahead and prevent cardiovascular disease?
Yeah, that's important. The American Heart Association has broken this down into what they call life's simple eight, and there are four behaviors and four risk factors. So the behaviors relate to diet, exercise, sleep, and tobacco use. And the risk factors that come from that are blood pressure, blood glucose, that speaks to the risk of diabetes, cholesterol, and weight, so maintaining an appropriate weight. And so we can delve into those four behaviors in particular. Excuse me. Diet, I think that sometimes people can be very overwhelmed by diet. They hear so many different things about what's important and what's healthy. I think it can be helpful to break it down to some simple truths. We really think that fruits, vegetables, whole grain, and healthy fat choices are important. It's oftentimes that fats get a very bad rap, but there are good fats and bad fats. So some good fats, examples, olive oil, avocado, fish that's not fried, nuts that aren't salted, beans, legumes, things that tend to come from the ground and give rise to life tend to be good choices. So avoiding things you can get at a gas station, avoiding things you can get at a fast food restaurant, minimizing those heavily processed foods and focusing on those fresh choices are some very simple, basic starting points. And then when we think about exercise, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Exercise next. So do we all have to go? Do we all have to go run a marathon?
We do not. And it's important that there are a lot of people who are very active. They're active in their day to day as a result of their work or their hobbies, and that's important. Being sedentary, just sitting on a couch and doing nothing, that risk is as high as being a smoker. And I think a lot of people understand the risk of tobacco use, but we'll get into that as well. So activity is important, but we want more than just activity. We do want some exercise. And so when we talk about exercise, we're talking about working hard enough in whatever activity you're doing. So brisk walking, jogging, using a stationary bike, a regular bike, swimming, an elliptical machine, anything that you're getting your heart rate elevated enough that you get a little huffy puffy. You can't speak in full sentences. You certainly couldn't sing a song if you tried. That's the type of exercise we're looking for. And we're trying to get 150 minutes of that a week. So you can break that down into a little over 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes 5 days a week, 40 minutes 4 days a week. That's the type of amount and workload we're looking for to try and help that cardiovascular system stay healthy.
Very good.
Sleep. Go ahead.
You talk about sleep. Yeah. How does sleep play into this? That's kind of interesting. Doesn't seem like it would.
Yeah. It's important to recognize that sleep is a contributor to cardiovascular disease, and many of us do not get an adequate amount of sleep. And so we're talking about a minimum of 7 to 8 hours a night being contributory to cardiovascular disease. So trying to make sure you get that adequate amount of sleep, and then tobacco use. We know that smoking is a leading risk factor for cardiovascular disease, and so avoiding tobacco entirely.
Wonderful. Texter writes at 651-461-9226. My primary care doctor says I've developed a heart murmur. She did an ultrasound, which she said shows mild stenosis. Her advice is to wait until it gets worse and then we'll take action. I'm uncomfortable with that. Is it all right if I go ahead and see a different cardiologist, like get a second opinion?
Really important to first describe what a heart murmur is about, and then we'll talk about the specifics of that aortic stenosis. So a murmur just reflects turbulent blood flow through the heart, and even a normal functioning heart will have a little turbulence of blood flow as the blood is moving through its chambers and through its valves. And so even a normal healthy heart can have a heart murmur. So there may be listeners out there who have been told they have a heart murmur, and that doesn't necessarily reflect a problem with the heart. In certain situations, we can have changes in structures, including the valves, that increase the amount of that turbulence and increase that murmur. In aortic stenosis, the aortic valve sits between the main pumping chamber of the heart and the body and is designed to open up and let blood flow into the body and then close to keep it from washing back into the heart. And as we get older, that valve can have some changes that cause it to thicken and become more tight or stenotic. Stenosis is that term. Yeah. Mild stenosis is not something that we need to intervene upon, but is appropriate to watch over time. And we watch that with both talking with patients to make sure we understand if they're having any symptoms that make us concerned about changes in that valve, and then with pictures of the heart on occasion. So the recommendations from American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology would say for a patient with mild aortic stenosis, it's appropriate to watch that over time and repeat an echocardiogram in 3 to 5 years. So I think that it sounds like the listener's primary care doctor is doing a good job.
What is an echocardiogram? In EKG, what does that show and what does that do? How does that help?
Yeah, an echocardiogram is a little different than an EKG. And we'll talk about both. So an echocardiogram is using ultrasound to take pictures of the heart. So just like a submarine uses ultrasound to try and determine its structures around it, we can use ultrasound to bounce off the heart and take pictures of the heart. And so that ultrasound then gives us pictures of the heart structure, the heart function, the valve function. We can also use that ultrasound. We talked a little bit about aortic stenosis. We can look at the blood flow. And when we can use the example of water coming out of a garden hose. If you put your finger on the end of that hose, you accelerate the flow and you can see it spray a lot further across your yard. The same is true for that valve. We can look for that evidence of that sped up flow or that increased flow as a marker of stenosis. An EKG is an electrical picture of the heart. So the heart has its own electrical system that helps coordinate the way that it functions. And so that EKG is essentially a picture of that electrical system on a piece of paper that helps us understand how the electrical system is working.
I think that's so interesting. I just had my annual physical, and I had an EKG, and they can tell the history of your heart. Like, I've had friends that have had them done, and their doctor says, oh, look, you had a heart attack or a heart event XYZ in your life. Is that right? Is that right? It can kind of look at the history of your heart and see how it's performing. Yeah.
In some ways it can. So as the heart changes, the electrical picture of the heart can change. And so there are certain markers or pictures that go along with prior heart damage on that electrical picture that can tell us about things like a prior heart attack.
Oh, cool. 651-461-9226. That is our stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. This person asks, is there any information that says that too much iron in your diet could be a factor in heart disease? Or not enough?
Certainly not enough iron can contribute to problems like blood cells that carry blood, that carry oxygen to the body. Iron is necessary to develop those blood cells. And certainly too much of anything is a bad thing. So I'm hesitant to say as to whether or not too much iron is certainly not safe, but I'm unfamiliar with iron specifically in the diet being related with risk of cardiovascular disease. But, you know, one of the challenges is that there's a lot to know. And so even experts like myself, it may be that I'm unaware of something related to iron and health, but it's not a major driver in the same way these health behaviors and typical risk factors are.
All right. Earlier in the program, a caller wanted to know about cardiac amyloidosis. Can you explain what it is, what causes it, and what can be done about it?
Yeah, cardiac amyloidosis, we have an increasing understanding of this being a common condition, particularly as patients get older. So there are a couple of different types of cardiac amyloidosis, but I'll just simply say that amyloidosis relates to a protein that starts to deposit in the heart and is typically, the more common version is found in patients as they get older. And so this deposit of a protein in the heart makes it so the heart does not function as well, particularly in that relaxation component of the heart. So the heart has two phases, one in which it's squeezing and sending blood to the body, the other in which it's relaxing to let blood back into the heart. And this is a problem mostly of that relaxation part of the heart, at least early on in the condition. And so that heart doesn't relax as well and blood can back up into the system like we talked about earlier.
651-461-9226. You have time here, about 15 more minutes left. This texter writes, I'm a 66-year-old woman. My father died of a heart attack at 41. I had a heart scan 2 years ago that shows I have a very high calcium score. Let's talk about that case after this quick break on News Talk 830 WCCO. And we're back with the last 4 minutes of the show. Can you believe it? It's gone by so fast. Dr. Bradley, you'll have to come on again with us because this is of great interest to so many of us. Health, Allina Health cardiologist Dr. Stephen Bradley is on our newsline with 4 minutes left. A texter writes, can radiation for breast cancer affect the heart? And maybe we'll try to get through a few of these here.
Yeah, absolutely. It can. So radiation can have, it can result in structural changes to the heart. So it's important to have good providers who are keeping that in mind as they continue to care for that patient.
All right. Another one writes, my dad was healthy except being a smoker. At 46, he dropped dead of a heart attack when I was 9. I've never smoked, but was around it. I'm in good shape, but he still worries if he's at risk just with that hereditary factor.
Yeah, so there's, we spoke about those behavioral factors. We spoke about tobacco use, but certainly secondhand smoke is recognized as a risk factor. It sounds like it's been a number of years since that caller has been exposed to that secondhand smoke, and we know over time the risk associated with that exposure goes down, so that's encouraging. But that family history does warrant attention, and so it's important that that listener have conversations with their care providers about understanding their risk and understanding if they're doing everything they can to prevent their risk of heart attacks for themselves.
Another texter writes, marijuana is now legal. Is smoking marijuana as dangerous as smoking cigarettes as it relates to a person's heart health?
Such an important question that we truly don't have a good understanding about. And part of that is because marijuana has been illegal for so long, it's not been legal to study it in the same way or as easy to study it in the same way as tobacco. We do understand that marijuana is associated with increased risk. I can't say whether or not that risk is equivalent to, less than, or more than tobacco use, but I can say that we know that marijuana use, smoking marijuana, is associated with increased cardiovascular risk.
We talked before the break about that 66-year-old woman whose father died of a heart attack at 41, and she did the heart scan. The Minneapolis Heart Institute offers that service where you go into them. Well, I'll let you describe it. What is that heart scan? Her calcium score was 90, and her doctor prescribed a statin drug. I think it's Rosuvastatin. She wonders if she should also see a cardiologist to get additional tests. Again, that's specific to her. Can you talk about that heart scan and what it measures and why it's important with the last two?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about coronary disease or cardiovascular disease, one of the common is this cholesterol plaques forming on the blood vessel wall. And as the cholesterol plaque sits down on the blood vessel wall, one of the things that happens is calcium gets deposited in those plaques as well. So we can use that calcium in these heart scans, which is a CT scan looking for that calcium, as a marker of cardiovascular plaque. And if we see that calcium, we know that lipid plaque is in the blood vessel, which means that there's increased risk of heart attack. Statin medications like rosuvastatin are our safest and most effective therapies to address that risk. And essentially, that medication in combination with, again, paying attention to those behaviors, diet, exercise, sleep, tobacco use, and those risk factors, blood pressure, blood glucose, cholesterol, and weight, that's really what it's about in preventing future heart attacks. And it sounds like that caller's doctor is all over it. There's not necessarily a need to see a cardiologist because it's about those preventive components, but obviously a cardiologist can always offer additional information.
Well, we have about a minute left. I recently went in, as mentioned, for my annual, and I found out my cholesterol is not good. 265, Dr. Bradley. And he put me on a statin, and someone asked in a text with a minute left, could I get that under control with diet, or is statin important to help in that process?
Yeah, so it depends is the the quick answer.
Okay.
Longer answer again is to say that it's always important to pay attention to those components of those risk factors and those behaviors. And then depending on the risk, depending on your cholesterol and those other factors, that then kind of tips the scale in terms of when we start a statin to further reduce the risk. And oftentimes that's where we need to start that medication to really optimize and reduce the risk of future events.
Well, you have been fantastic. I really appreciate your time and your knowledge. We got a lot of great questions. We didn't get to everybody. But if people have questions about their own health, really, doctor, bring it to their primary, correct? I mean, if they didn't get it here, they should bring it up with the person and have a primary doctor.
Absolutely. And then their friendly cardiologist that they could see as well. It was a pleasure to be with you today.
Awesome day. I hope you have a wonderful day. It is 7:54, almost 7:55 on WCCO. WCCO. And we're back with the last 4 minutes of the show. Can you believe it? It's gone by so fast. Dr. Bradley, you'll have to come on again with us because this is of great interest to so many of us. Health Alina Health cardiologist Dr. Stephen Bradley is on our news line with 4 minutes left. A texter writes, can radiation for breast cancer affect the heart? And maybe we'll try to get through a few of these here.
Yeah, absolutely. It can. So radiation can have, it can result in structural changes to the heart. So it's important to have good providers who are keeping that in mind as they continue to care for that patient.
All right, another one writes, my dad was healthy except being a smoker. At 46, he dropped dead of a heart attack when I was 9. I've never smoked, but was around it. I'm in good shape, but he still worries if he's at risk just with that hereditary factor.
Yeah, so there's, we spoke about those behavioral factors. We spoke about tobacco use, but certainly secondhand smoke is recognized as a risk factor. It sounds like it's been a number of years since that caller has been exposed to that secondhand smoke, and we know over time the risk associated with that exposure goes down, so that's encouraging. But that family history does warrant attention, and so it's important that that listener have conversations with their care providers about understanding their risk and understanding if they're doing everything they can to prevent their risk of heart attacks for themselves.
Another texter writes, marijuana is now legal. Is smoking marijuana as dangerous as smoking cigarettes as it relates to a person's heart health?
Such an important question that we truly don't have a good understanding about. And part of that is because marijuana has been illegal for so long, it's not been legal to study it in the same way or as easy to study it in the same way as tobacco. We do understand that marijuana is associated with increased risk. I can't say whether or not that risk is equivalent to, less than, or more than tobacco use, but I can say that we know that marijuana use, smoking marijuana, is associated with increased cardiovascular risk.
We talked before the break about that 66-year-old woman whose father died of a heart attack at 41, and she did the heart scan. The Minneapolis Heart Institute offers that service where you go into them. Well, I'll let you describe it. What is that heart scan? Her calcium score was 90. And her doctor prescribed a statin drug. I think it's Rosuvastatin. Mm-hmm. She asked, she wonders if she should also see a cardiologist to get additional tests. Again, that's specific to her. Can you talk about that heart scan and what it measures and why it's important with the last two?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about coronary disease or cardiovascular disease, one of the common is this cholesterol plaques forming on the blood vessel wall. And as the cholesterol plaque sits down on the blood vessel wall, one of the things that happens is calcium gets deposited in those plaques as well. So we can use that calcium in these heart scans, which is a CT scan looking for that calcium, as a marker of cardiovascular plaque. And if we see that calcium, we know that lipid plaque is in the blood vessel, which means that there's increased risk of heart attack. Statin medications like rosuvastatin are our safest and most effective therapies to address that risk. And essentially, that medication in combination with, again, paying attention to those behaviors, diet, exercise, sleep, tobacco use, and those risk factors, blood pressure, blood glucose, cholesterol, and weight, that's really what it's about in preventing future heart attacks. And it sounds like that caller's doctor is all over it. There's not necessarily a need to see a cardiologist because it's about those preventive components. But obviously, a cardiologist can always offer additional information.
Well, we have about a minute left. I recently went in, as mentioned, for my annual, and I found out my cholesterol is not good. 265, Dr. Bradley. And he put me on a statin, and someone asked in a text with a minute left, could I get that under control with diet, or is statin important to help in that process?
Yeah, so it depends is the the quick answer.
Okay.
Longer answer again is to say that it's always important to pay attention to those components of those risk factors and those behaviors. And then depending on the risk, depending on your cholesterol and those other factors, that then kind of tips the scale in terms of when we start a statin to further reduce the risk. And oftentimes that's where we need to start that medication to really optimize and reduce the risk of future events.
Well, you have been fantastic. I really appreciate your time and your knowledge. We got a lot of great questions. We didn't get to everybody. But if people have questions about their own health, really, doctor, bring it to their primary, correct? I mean, if they didn't get it here, they should bring it up with the person and have a primary doctor.
Absolutely. And then their friendly cardiologist that they could see as well. It was a pleasure to be with you today.
Awesome day. I hope you have a wonderful day. It is 7:54, almost 7:55 on WCCO.